Hey everybody, I'm so glad you're listening to the radio. You are in for a treat. We have a session with a remarkable guitar player, until recently based in Nashville. Soon after he recorded the session for us in the library, early in December, he upstaked with his family and moved to Los Angeles. We caught him just in time. This is Jed Hughes.
No one is a victim when you put it to the light. This ain't nothing, it's We're just getting warmed up. Feels good in here. I'm sweating. I'm Jed Hughes. Thanks for joining us. We're going to be playing some new tunes from my record. We got another one coming at you. This is Thinking About You. This is a song called Animal Eyes. First song I wrote for this record, West.
Crawling out of the morning, shedding dead skin. Last night was a real chameleon. Crawling into daylight, lost a little boy unbound. looking for myself in my shadow on the ground. Staring into animal eyes. I've been deep in thinking. I've been a real nowhere man. I've been out of my body and my head. And I can't find a reason.
started writing this song years ago up in New England on a night off with a pepperoni pizza and a 12-string guitar and an imaginary girlfriend. And had this kicking around for a while, and then I never took it that seriously until a few people started saying they liked it. And it ended up being the last song I recorded for this record. It's called Back to You.
Shadows on the alleys and the places I don't go. When the stillness of the air is cut by a siren, I'm back to you. When the moon is on its feet and it's dancing on the river, when lovers on a bridge hold each other like forever, when the star that you won't show me is shining in my view, I'm back to you. I'm back to you. Watching a man wishing he could fly. One has a wind, one has the stars, one still paying on the family car. The price of free, it just keeps getting higher. Sleepless, restless, watching a bird on the wire. Tethered by the fear of forgetting how to fly. The same days keep coming, the same ways keep numbing, the will to fight the god of gravitation. Anxious, thankless, dreaming of the great migration. Ride in the river, ride in the river with. The tide takes a swimmer, the tide breaks a swimmer in two.
Love the music, have to tell you. Just saying outside. It is redolent of music, that Laurel Canyon stuff that Jacob Dylan made the documentary on it.
I just watched it last night. Yeah, Echoes in the Canyon.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
You listen to the music and you look at that place and think, that's just about 2 miles from Los Angeles, from downtown, you know?
Yeah.
It looks like a world apart.
That was crazy. Yeah.
And your music sounds like that. It sounds like you created a space.
Thank you. Yeah.
How'd you do that? Were you drawing on the music that you grew up playing with this record?
Not really. No, I honestly, I sort of put up some walls and I just tried to shut out the world and find things that were instinctually felt good to me, and I led with that the whole record. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of influences in there, but in the writing of the songs and the construction of the tracks, the assembly of everything, I was just sort of running on instinct and does this feel good. Those were the two important questions.
You grew up in Australia.
Yeah.
You come from a musical family, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were playing acoustic music in Australia?
I was playing both. I started out on acoustic guitar. My dad was kind of the campfire hero in Quorn, where I grew up, which is a very small town on the edge of the South Australian desert. I grew up playing acoustic guitar until I'd saved enough money to buy a American-made Fender Telecaster, which took me a few years. But once I had that in hand, I was ready to go.
When I was growing up, America and the music that came from America seemed incredibly exotic, like another planet.
Yeah.
Richard Thompson said that he wanted to write a song about cowboys, but he couldn't figure out how to do it in the UK. So he wrote that song about riding the motorcycle.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's the way it was for a lot of us in that generation, was that sense of that's the only way I can really describe it. It's like another planet. And I'm wondering how it came across to you, living in a small town on the edge of the South Australian desert.
Yeah. It was far out to me. Yeah, it was music from outer space, for sure. Like,
where did you hear it? Did you hear it on the radio, or was it just records that you were able to listen to?
A little bit on the radio, but all we had was kind of a local AM station, out of Port Augusta, and they played mainly sort of 70s rock and roll, or I do remember hearing the Traveling Wilburys on that station and thinking, I like this. But mainly my dad had a pretty fat stack of great records, American and English and Australian folk, sort of what they call bush balladeers, which are songs written about the Australian outback and sort of Australian life. They call those bush ballads. So I had a good sort of cross-section of American country music, and there was a few rock and roll records in there. There was The Byrds, and my dad had a Live at Woodstock record, which I loved because it had a picture of, you know, Jimi Hendrix playing a white Stratocaster. And I was like, oh, man.
Oh, that's it. You were done.
Yeah. I was like, I gotta get bigger hair. I remember thinking that when I was 8. How am I going to get my hair that big? That never happened. And then he also had these great records, you know, like just great 60s rock and roll records from the UK. Beatles records, some Stones records, and I was into all of it. Yeah. I was a lot more into country music starting out because there were all these country music festivals in Australia, and I could go and compete in these talent quests and make money.
This is like Nashville country music?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you like 90s American country music. And I sort of gravitated towards artists like Lyle Lovett and Hal Ketchum and people that were being signed, Steve Earle, that were sort of, I didn't realize it, but they were sort of on the fringes of country music over here. So when I got over here, it's actually kind of a rude shock to know that they weren't really that popular in the mainstream. I didn't realize what I was into. It was sort of niche.
I know what you mean. I had a similar experience. Yeah. And you moved over to Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, I went straight to Texas, West Texas, a little town called Levelland. Outside
Culture
of Lubbock.
Shock?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I remember the first time I said g'day to somebody, I thought I was going to get knocked over by a guy. I thought I was going to get in a fight. It was hilarious.
Because it's such a... first of all, it's a huge state, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I always have this sense that Texas has a sort of insular culture, that they have trouble with people from outside because they're so... they're part of the country and yet isolated at the same time.
Yeah.
A bit like where you grew up, really.
Yeah, there actually were a lot of similarities. Mm. Even in sort of environmentally when I got there, it's very sort of flat and dry and not unlike South Australia where I grew up. I thought, God, did I just fly 11,000 miles to, you know, be kicking rocks around the dust and, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. But the people in West Texas were incredibly welcoming. And I think they just, you know, there weren't a lot of Australians in West Texas, and that was sort of something of an anomaly out there.
People, but it's a wonderfully rich culture.
Yeah, really rich. And I discovered this whole thing called Texas music when I got there, and a lot of incredible writers and artists that I had no idea existed.
But it did explain where Lyle Lovett came from.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he seems to me very much sort of West Texas attitude in his stuff.
Yeah, know? Yeah, between him and Robert Earle. Mm. Yeah, definitely got a good dose of, you know, that culture, musical culture.
So what were you doing in Texas? You went there to study the music, right?
Yeah.
You figured you'd come to the source to study it.
I did. I saved up money from touring in Australia. I left high school when I was 16 and started saving up my touring money, wanting to go to this college.
Wow, what's it like to tour Australia? The distances are immense, aren't they?
They are, yeah. After 1 year, I was like, all right, I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this my whole life, driving 8 hours to each gig, you know. It was crazy.
Although it was practice for here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that. And this last week I've probably driven, you know, almost 4,000 miles. Yeah, once I sort of went through the circuit once, I was 17, I just sort of decided I've got to get to America, and came over and went to school, South Plains College, for almost 2 years. And then I moved up to Nashville. I'd met a guy called Terry McBride, who had come down from Nashville to give a workshop about what happens in Nashville and, you know, the sort of industry and the songwriting community here. And Terry had been sort of entrenched in Nashville for about 20, 25 years. And I met Terry after his talk at our college, and I gave him a CD of a couple of songs I'd written, some demos I'd made. And he kind of reached back out when he got home and said, you know, what are you planning to do after school? And I said, well, I think I'd like to come to Nashville, but I don't know anybody. He said, well, you know one person. Come sleep on my couch for a while.
Oh, great.
And I'll try to help you out, you know. And
I mean, what are the odds, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I took him up on it, and I sort of flew home for Christmas, and then I came back, and Terry was just, you know, so amazing in helping me, introducing me to all of these incredible writers in Nashville, and people like Guy Clark and Kim Ritchie and Big Al Anderson. I mean, so many incredible writers, and it just, you know, threw me into the deep end of collaboration, co-writing.
That's what you started doing?
Yeah. That's
what like going from a jog to a sprint.
Yeah, it was. It was, a lot of it was quite terrifying.
And I was listening to you earlier, and I'm like, wow, this sounds like Clapton with little feet.
Oh, cool. Wow, that's the coolest thing anybody's ever said to me.
That's what it sounded like. It was just so funky, but and those lines, yeah, you were playing, and Sam said, David Gilmour, it's David Gilmour, you know. So,
oh, cool. Yeah.
But that's from those records you were listening to.
Yeah.
But then how did that apply in Nashville? Was that a style that worked in Nashville to play like that?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, it didn't. And for a long time, I was trying to jam a square peg into a round hole, as they say. Not really realizing, you know, the low sort of success rate I was having in formulating my own ideas musically. And eventually I honestly just gave up on it. I stopped making my own music, and I decided to forge ahead as a collaborator and sideman guitar player. Because I was tired of pulling my hair out and feeling like I was beating my head against the wall.
So who did you start with as a side person?
So the first person to kind of take me under their wing, and who is still one of my dearest friends and mentors, was a guy called Rodney Crowell. And when things kind of went south with my first record deal, he came knocking on my door and said, let's go, you know, you're coming with me. You're going to play loud electric guitar in my band. And I said, okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And that's what I did. And we toured as...
And you were ready for that at that point, apparently.
Yeah, I was...
I mean, that's, you know...
I was a big fan.
We're talking now a heavy sprint.
Yeah.
This is a marathon you're into now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was part of the art club, you know. That was a heck of a band.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was well aware of him, and I had met him a few years earlier on tour with Patti Loveless, which is my first paying gig in Nashville. And I knew all of Rodney's music because I'd gotten hip to it in Australia, and particularly a record he made called The Houston Kid. So I just loved the sound of that record and the songs on that record and the stories and Stuart Smith's guitar playing. And
you have to wonder how he survived. You know, he's talking about chasing that mosquito spraying truck, spraying poison,
DDT.
just spraying it out in the air. Yeah. There's these kids on their bikes riding behind him.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, that's just a different world.
Yeah.
But the man's an incredible guitar player. And you've worked since with Vince Gill.
Yeah.
And I've said to a number of people to orient them, oh, Jed, you know, he, along with making his own records, he plays guitar with Vince Gill. And then I'm like, why would anybody play guitar with Vince Gill? But the same could be said for Rodney Crowell.
Yeah.
You know? So well, they don't need another guitar player. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I ask myself that question every night on stage with them. What am I doing here? You guys don't need me. But they love playing with other people, you know.
My wife has said to me a number of times, in order to live, you have to come to terms with the fact that you're going to die.
Wow.
Once you've accepted that, everything's cool.
Mm.
And you allowed your own music to die, in effect.
Yeah.
And said, okay, all right, I'm open. What do you want?
Yeah.
And you opened yourself up to it. But you'd already woodshedded for so long that you were ready for it when they said, come on, you can join the fast lane. Jed, come on in.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I was...
You didn't think about it, did you?
I didn't have a lot of choice. Don't have many other skills. In my back pocket.
Well,
so
what other skills you need when you can do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was still really intimidating for me, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, those first shows with Rodney and the first shows with Emmy Lou and the first shows with Vince and, you know, those guys are people I've looked up to for a long time and I certainly don't take it lightly being on stage with them playing their music.
But at the same time, they don't want somebody there who can play what they're playing. They're looking for another voice.
Yeah.
So you're in a situation where, as you said, it's intimidating, but you're looking to find your voice, to find a place in the harmony, I guess, is one way to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And even that sort of journey of like, well, I'm here to be myself and I'm, you know, hired to be myself. But people that are familiar with their music are expecting one thing and there you are bringing another thing into the picture. And it can cause some discourse here and there, you know, like I definitely had some raised eyebrows in my direction as far as, you know, my musical instincts that I would sometimes bring into those environments.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, what I was thinking that would be intimidating about Nashville is it is kind of nurturing. They invited you in. They offered you some support.
Mm.
But then the minute you're in there, they're going to start saying, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Who are you again?
Yeah. Yeah. And what are you doing? And really, that's what you're into? Huh. Do you have any songs about trucks? Well, no, not really. I'm not really that into trucks. I mean, I like the fact that they transport things, but do I relate to that? No, not really. it's sort of, you know, I mean, I stepped out of that race really early on because I knew that what I was into musically was just in a different world. But it took me a long time to really creatively give myself permission to start really acknowledging the fact that I have these musical instincts and I have these things that inspire me, and it's okay to make my own music with these, you know, ingredients, which is what this record is.
Yeah. You left home to find yourself.
Yeah. There you go.
We all do that, you know?
Yeah. Every now and then, you know, I've written God, I don't know how many hundred songs over the years. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs. And a lot of them you kind of write and you move on from. And some of them somehow stick around in the back of your mind and they creep back in years later. And this is one of those songs. I wrote this with my friends Sarah Buxton and Gordy Sampson. And I think we were all listening to a lot of Tom Waits at the time. And somebody made the comment about being a crazy old man someday. Something some of us aspire to. And we ended up writing this song. And I like to play it for my wife, Allison. She probably won't make me a crazy old man. I'll probably do that all by myself. But I think about her when I play this because she's a good woman. She takes care of me and I'm lucky, really lucky to have her. So I'm going to play this for her. This is called Crazy Old Man.
You're going to make me a crazy old man someday. Long before my jet black hair turns gray. Scares me half to death sometimes the way you take my breath away. You're gonna make me a crazy old man someday. You're gonna wear my heart down to the bone. Draw a little bit of life out of this stone. The only thing I ever loved too much to ever think about running. You're gonna make me a crazy old man someday. You're gonna be the storm that sinks the ship. And you could steal the last kiss from my lips. Right now the sun is shining, let's just make some hay. You're gonna make me a crazy old man someday. Me talking to myself. You're gonna be the good times and the bad, but either way, you're gonna make me a crazy old man someday. You're gonna make me a crazy old man someday.
Right, let's get this band back. It's not very often I remember my dreams nowadays. For some reason, I don't know. But those nights when I do, those mornings when I wake up, man, I'm so glad to have a couple of snapshots stuck in my mind of where I've been while I'm sleeping. This song is about a series of dreams I had in... The second verse was a friend of mine that's passed on that showed up to check in, and I was really glad to see him. The song is called The Dreamer.
Thank you. I'm a dream walking in a world far away. Black sandy beaches, the bones of strange creatures, and pieces of my memories wash up in the fireworks and then Jackson Pollock's universe flying across his canvas and falling back to earth. Somewhere between real life and a wild imagination, I'm halfway between living.
Take another puff, as if it were
Taste like
The remarkable Jed Hughes, recorded live in the library, as with all of our sessions, recorded in the state-of-the-art recording studio on the second floor of the Chattanooga Public Library in downtown. It was produced, engineered, and mixed by the redoubtable Sam Mensah. The executive producers for Live in the Library are me for the radio station, Sam Mensah for the library, and we'll have another session, hopefully as good as this one, for you next Thursday. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Richard Winham.